connected to either their own lack of universal location or encountering the people who had that power. And then, particularly important is the Arba Psukim at the end of Koheles, Sof Davar HaKol Nishma, Selokim Yirah Es Mitzvosav Shemar Kizeh Kol HaAdam, which again puts Yirah Selokim in a very central, a very pivotal spot. And then, the Psukim with regard to Eov as well, where essentially the test revolves around whether or not, indeed, as Rabbi Shalom has described it, is Eov really a Yirei Elokim? Can somebody be a Yirei Elokim without being tested? If that's the point, Yirei Elokim needs a test, or at least without a test, it's hard to know whether someone is a Yirei Elokim, whether it's an experiential problem or an epistemological problem, I guess you might say. That seems to be open to question how you read the Psukim. But either way, Eov needs to establish his credentials when it comes to Yirei Elokim. And in a way, the whole Sefer Eov, just like the whole Sefer Koheles, then maybe revolves around this question of the role of Yirei Elokim and whether or not one has established his credentials in that respect or not. The Gemara in Baal Basra, Daf Pesvav, the Gemara in Sota, Daf Lamed Aleph, when they discuss the relationship between Eov and Avram, revolves around that issue. Maybe Eov was greater than Avram, or at least the depth of his test in terms of Yirei Elokim was greater. On the other hand, Avram was Me'ahava. Was Eov also Me'ahava? I don't have the Gemaras in front of me at the moment, but the Gemaras in those two places are very, very fascinating. Gemara Sota Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. Again, the Bar Shah there tries to contrast Yira and Abba, which is a popular theme in general, the relationship between Yiras Shemayim and then Abbas Hashem. But it doesn't seem that the Gemara is contrasting them in any way. The Gemara seems to think that the Abba is an expression of the Yira itself. In any case, if we look further, the Ram in Hilchos Yesod HaTorah, Perek Beis, Halakha Aleph and Beis. Also has an interesting formulation. Hakel Nechla Pandora Hazen Mitzvah La'avo Uliyira Uliyira Osa Shenemar V'Hafas Hashem Alakecha V'Nemar Es Hashem Alakecha Tira. So that's just striking, because one would have expected that these be broken up into two, especially since to some extent they represent a contrast. But the Rambam in one halakha, quoting, of course, different psukim, different makaros, presents them together. And then he does that again in halakha Beis, which seems to seal it. In other words, the makaros are brought together, and then the heichu aderech la'avaso v'yiraso. You would have expected, they have the same two halakhos, but they split them up differently. Speak about Abba, and then Yira, or Yira, and then Abba, quote the pasuk, and then quote the heichu aderech. It's almost as if the Rambam intentionally is grouping them together, both in the Makar and in the Derech. Heicho Derech La'avasa V'yiraso, V'shoshi Yizbon Yidhada V'masa, Gubruha Niflaim Hagedolim, V'yira Mehen Chachmaso, She'en La'erech, Lokeitz, Miyadu Ohev, U'mishabeach, U'mufa'er, U'mitaveh, Ha'ba Gedola, Leina Hashem Agadol, K'mo She'amar David, Soma Nafshi L'alakim L'kelchara. So the first, the initial reaction is one of Ahava, and then upon further reflection, miyadu nirta la'koram v'yivcha v'yivada shuhugiriya k'tana shvela afela omenes v'das kala m'uta lifnei t'mimdeyas. K'mo she'amar David, ki arecha shamecha ma'asei etzba osecha ma'enosh kisis karet. V'lepi adar ba'elu ani m'vayar k'lalas b'yolam b'maisa ribon ha'olamim k'nishya pesach l'nevin le'ahov es Hashem. That's how the Rambam justifies the whole structure, really, of Mishnah Torah, in the beginning of Sefer Mada, and internally to Sisodi HaTorah, and so on. So again, it's just very striking that the Rambam puts them together, and that works in well with the Gemara's about Eov and Avram, etc., that even though there's a contrast between Abba and Yira in one respect, but the point is the combination that emerges, and the Yira as the second stage, if you will, of Abba. So that also is very intriguing. Again, it helps us understand the Avraham Iyov discussion, but again, it raises the profile of Yirasa Hakim. In Sefer Mitzvos, as we noted last time, the Rambam is also challenging, because the Rambam seems to speak there about Yira, not in terms of Yirasa Romimus, but Yirasa Onesh. And some of the folks should note this, and they wonder about it, because of Sonia Torah, it sounds as if we're talking about Yira Saromus. Why would the Rambam reduce Yira to Yira Saonesh? Again, you have the preceded by Kishitzibadu Ba'avasa Yisalel. It also is a little bit different in the Sefer Mitzvah. Zeshen Achshoven is Bonin B'Mitzvah Ma'amarabu Pula Osav. He quotes Avraham Avinu again, is the paradigm. Right, Avraham Ohavi. And then Mitzvah Dalet, Rishon Tzivonu Lahamin Yerasa Yisala Lehifachet Nivenu, Veloniya Kikofrim Holchem Bishriru Sliva Ubekeri. Avon Nira Mi Yeras Onsho Bechol Eis, Vezeo Amaro, Es Hashem Elokecha Kira. Then the Gemara goes on to explain, and so on. So the problem is several things. Number one, why the Yiras Onesh and not Yiras Rambamus. Number two, Bilonia Kekofer Mahochem Beshrir Sliva Mubakeri. So it sounds as if the Rambam is not interested only in the fact that we should have Yiras Onesh, but that the Yiras Onesh should be part, again, of a larger perspective which negates the philosophy of Kofrim, Ochem, Shur, Sliba, Bekari, who believe that there is no Hashgacha. Aval Nira, Yiras Onsho, Bechal Eis. Right? The Bechal Eis is also interesting. If you're really just a question of Yiras Onesh, then it should be the Shas Asiyah Shachet, or to prevent you from doing that. Maybe that's all the Rambam means. But it sounds like it's more than that. What it really sounds like is that Mitzvah Daled is a commandment, it's an imperative, to believe in the concept of Hashgacha. So the concept that a person is, A, held accountable, and B, that there is a Hashgacha in his life. Veloniya Kekofer Mahokam B'Shrir Sliva Mubakeri. And as I mentioned, that echoes in my mind, at least, it, what resonates immediately is Perek Aleph of Os Kindness in the Rambam. When the Rambam says that, you have to be Tzoek, and you have to be Tzom, and an Eis Tzara, and to say simply, Davar Zeh Nikra Nikreis, it happened, that is Achzarius, that's Holech Imo Keri. So again, if you look at each one separately, they're very interesting. And a little bit puzzling. You put them together, Mitzvah Dalet here and Paragalaphos Titus, then I think they're mutually illuminating. And basically what they establish is, what they're telling us in the Mitzvah Titus and here in Sefer Mitzvos, is that you have to adopt the philosophy of Hashgacha. You have to believe in Hashgacha, and that's why it has to be Bechal Eis. Right, not just, again, it could be Bechal Eis, to be a deterrent against sin. But it doesn't sound that way in the Rambam. It sounds like this is the philosophy that you have to constantly adopt, as opposed to the Kofrim, Ahochim, B'Shrir, Sliba, Mubakeri. And I think I'd also explain to the Rambam, Shehi, Lahamin, Yiraso, Yisala, Oli, Fakhen, Mimedu. The Rambam doesn't just say that, you have to be Yare, Mimina Onesh. The Rambam says you have to believe in the concept of Yare, Mimina Onesh. Why is that a belief? Right, that's more of a prescription. It's not a belief. But if the Rambam is saying that we're talking about here is an approach to life, a perspective on life, that perspective being one in which Yiras Onesh plays an important role because not because of the Onesh per se and the deterrent that it serves, but philosophically it establishes that's your anchor in life. That's your That's what gives you purpose, and that's what gives your life purpose. And then we understand very well what it means. It's lahamin, to believe in this concept. And in that sense, what I'm suggesting is that the Yiras HaRomimus of Perek Beis, Sefer Sodei HaTorah, which is again grouped together with Ahava, and the Lahamin, the Yiras, Ha'onesh, are really two sides of the same coin. Basically, they are a philosophy of how you're supposed to look at your purpose in life. And that that expresses itself in different ways, but it's all part of the overall principle of Yiras Elokim. To be a Yirah Elokim isn't just to act in a way that deters you from chet, and it isn't only to have Yiras Aramimus, it's to include Yiras HaChet, Tamid, Lahamin, together with Yiras Aramimus, as a rejection of the philosophy, the Achzari philosophy, of Keri, to give you a sense of grounding, of a purpose in your life. That's really what it's all about. And that's what Avraham Avinu established at the Akedah. Atayanati ki yirei Elokim ata. As I mentioned previously, Avraham Avinu's life looked extremely complex. And to an outsider, it might have even looked problematic. Or at least one could have questioned some of the decisions that he made. And the question is, what was his core? What was his foundation? Where did it all come from? Where's the consistency, the inner consistency, which resolves some of these questions? And that's the point. That Nisayon, whether the most Rishonim, the final Nisayon at all, but the most Rishonim, Atinati ki yirei Elokim ata, is the climax, because Sofa Hokiach al Tchilasa. Okay, the fact that he's willing to go as far as he's willing to go in something which is the most dear to him reflects not only on his ability to rise to the occasion in an Akedah. The Akedah ends up being the cornerstone for his Ava, his Yira, and for all of his decisions, for his belief in Ashkacha and purpose, but his wider agenda in religious life and the consistent, complex decisions that he makes flows from that. And that's what he says to Avimelech. He says, you know, Rakein Yiras Elokim v'Makom Hazeh, right? They're going to ask me about, you know, the first thing you ask somebody is, well, so you might say, you know, the first thing you ask somebody is your wife, is your sister. You know, so it's a, they're not perfect people. Okay, their standards are low. Okay, but that's really such a terrible thing. That means there's people that cannot be dealt with. Again, it's certain little things, there are certain litmus tests along the way that highlight, you know, what perspective or what philosophy of life is being embraced by a certain culture. You know, when you see somebody, that's the first question you ask him. So it's not just, you don't have to just worry about that issue. You have to, you know, wonder what the culture is based on. And essentially, that's the culture of Amalek. I said the Achzari, Hochu Ini Keri, Asher Karcha Baderach culture of Amalek, which the Rambam is rejecting. I think both in Ochastanis and in Sefer Mitzvos as being the opposite of Yiras Elokim, which is exactly what the Psukim in Kisei say link it to, an abandonment of the principle of Yiras Elokim, either on behalf of Kal Yisrael, which made them vulnerable to Amalek, or describing the ideology of Amalek to begin with. And that, I think, is why the Rambam puts together the Ava and the Yira together and say two sides of the same coin. And I think that is the that is what is behind the principle of Sof Davar HaKol Nishma Es Olakim Yira Es Mitzvosav Shemar Kizek Kol HaAdam. Right? Not Kol Adam, but Kol HaAdam. The whole Koheles is really about trying to make sense of life, give life meaning, number one. And it tests different guiding principles, essentially, right? That's whether it's wisdom or it's you know, physical pleasure, hedonism, you know, whether it is you know, having no, you know, to have, living a purposeless life, sichlus, right? They're all different philosophies. Is it asceticism? Everything is being tried. Is it intellectualism? And everything falls short. Right. So one could have said that all of these things have been rejected, and they have no religious value. So Koheles tells us in the very end, Sof Davar HaKol Nishma. At the end of the day, it's a really very powerful statement. Everything that we've discussed, Hakol Nishma, all has value. in theory. As long as it's put in the proper framework. So one way to read the pasuk, I'm not saying that it was always read this way, is that, again, everything, the ace l'spod and the ace, you know, l'skok, ace, you know, l'ntoa, ace l'ktsar, all the contrasts, everything. You know, the hedonism and the asceticism, you know, the pain and the happiness and the pleasure, all of it has its place, sof davar kol nishma, as long as it's regulated by the proper principle, as long as it's put in the proper framework of decision-making and of ideology. And that decision-making ideology, all that is rooted in es mitzvot shemar, but es elokim yirah. The philosophy is the es elokim yirah, which means, again, having this sense of purpose, this trust in hashgacha, this foundation of hashgacha, this sense that everything you do is, you know, is significant, and you're going to be held accountable for it. But it's not only the negative; it's also the positive. If life is significant, and therefore you're being held accountable, then by the very same token, life is valuable, and possibly you can enrich, you know, the world, your own life, and even the lives of others, and maybe even the lives of future generations. So once you adopt the Yiras Onesh and the Lahamin part of the Hashgacha, so together with the Yiras Aromimus and the Avos Hashem, so then it just makes all of life meaningful. So all the, you know, thorny issues raised by Koheles, the lack of meaning, all of that is taken care of in one fell swoop. From total life devoid, a life totally devoid of meaning, you end up to a life in which there's infinite value, and which every decision that you make, every thing that you're involved in a way, right, with the proper balance of Es Mitzvot Shemar, which means you have to not just have a good Jewish heart and good Jewish values, but Es Mitzvot Shemar, you have to keep the norms themselves. And those norms, together with the values, Es Elokim Yirah, end up creating a very wide and broad agenda. This understanding of Yiras Elokim, far from being limiting, ends up being expanding. If you want to formulate whether you call it Torah Mana, Torah Chachma, whatever you want to call it, ideology, in an ambitious way, not as a compromise, then it has to be on the basis of this this kind of idea. If that's true, so again, we understand that Hakol Bidei Shamayim Chutz V'Yiras Shamayim as well, right? Which Chazal say. What that means is that the Yiras Shamayim is the philosophy of life that you're supposed to adopt. And even though a person can't control the events swirling around him, with only one individual, some cases there are forces of nature in addition to forces of other human beings, but hakol bidei shemayim chutz meyiras shemayim. But a person can control the ideology and the perspective, the regulating principle of how he runs his life and how he perceives things and how he responds to things. Okay, a person can't avoid tragedy in his life necessarily, or challenges in his life. But how he responds to them is something that he very much does control. And in a sense, that's the Jewish response to the problem of theodicy, too. And that's what the Rav described in Kol Dodi Dofei. Basically, you know, the question of why things happen to EO or to any other EO is a question which is a little bit unanswerable. There might be different models. Now, there's a Mipnei Chata'enu, there's a Yisurim Shel Ahava, it could be the spillover from someone else, it could be, you know, a test that is going to make you stronger. I mean, there could be, you know, all sorts of different possible explanations that operate at different times, but probably you can never fully know. And probably at the end of the day, it isn't so important to know. What's important is to be Mefash Vesh B'Masecha, which means Es Mitzvosav Shemar. And the other thing that's important is that one, there should be a certain measure of tzidukadim, acceptance, but at the same time, you're Elokim, that a person should respond from the perspective of Yiras Shamayim, this regulating principle of seeing value in his life and seeing hashkacha, accepting hashkacha. In that sense, a Kavod HaShemayim puts in Yiras Shamayim is not such a, it sounds like there's only this one little thing that a person has, and that's his Yiras Shamayim. But everything else, he's walking around in a fog, essentially, without any kind of control over his destiny. But, if Yiras Elokim is really as central as it seems to be, you've got quite a bit. When you've got Yiras Elokim, namely the ability to respond to any situation, even if you can't control the events, but in terms of your inner life, you have a lot. You may not have so much control over events that take place, but in what's really important, the world of your inner spirit, you have almost total control. If you have a wide understanding of what Yiras Elokim is, including emuna behashkacha, and a certain sense of bitachon. Bitachon having two meanings. Bitachon that things are for the good, and bitachon that, whether they are or not for the good, or whether you understand them as being for the good, that you accept them nonetheless. All that becomes part of Yiras Elokim. In the parsha that we just read, in Parshas Vayetze, so we read of the Sulam Mutzav Arts of Rosh Magia Shamaima. So according to the Ramban, Elokim Nitzav Alav refers to Hashgacha. Now in the end, the Malachim can go up and down, there can be ups and downs, but in the end one has to believe, and the Ramban adds, L'shitaso, that, particularly when it comes to Klal Yisrael, there's Hashgacha, Pratis, and it's also direct. So whatever the ups and downs, of a person's life, that awareness, that belief, ends up being not just comforting, it ends up being a regulating principle which determines everything that he does. If this is true, so we, of course, we perfectly understand what went on with Eo. That's the whole story of Eo, essentially, the test of his Yiras Elokim. How he could withstand, the things that happened to him. And in the end, if he passes the test, he was in a state of development, so his status is that of Avraham Avinu. It's interesting, I mentioned earlier in the year that Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah are linchpins of the rest of the year, especially Yom Kippur, the day of Kul Al Hashem. And of course, that's the day that the Rambam characterizes as the day of Yira Vafachad. But I always like to quote that in Perushim Shnayis, the Rambam's formulation is a little different than in Mishnah. Mishnah Torah says that Yimei Yira Vafachad Ve'ein Bahem Simcha Yisera, which of course also acknowledges that Yira Vafachad and Simcha are not a part of the Sasri at all. They affect each other, but they're not mutually exclusive kibuzet. Best proof is that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, Yimei Yira Vafachad, according to many Rishonim, also is kind of a component of Simcha. And even according to Rishonim, that have a significant component of Simcha, do not deny that they're Yimei Yira Vafachad. But more important even than that, is that they say in Pirush Mishnayis, the Rambam says that they're Yimei Yira Vafachad, Minenu, you're concerned and you have this tremendous yira of the Ribbono Shel Olam, but then he says manos umivrach elav, and the yira, which I guess initially causes you to recoil a little bit or to put greater distance between yourself and the Ribbono Shel Olam, yirta, like the Rambam said in Perek Nesi v'Sasani HaTorah, essentially. When that happens, so that's only an initial response. But since it is connected to the Ava, as in case of the Ava, so the case of the Yiraso, and then the Eov and the Avram, the Yira which flows from Ava, so in a sense, so that's only the first step in Yirta and Lachorov. But then comes the Mivrach, the Manosela. Then the Yira leads you to recognize that the only refuge that you have, the only real and important relationship that you have, or let me say it a different way, all the important relationships that you have are themselves enhanced or given meaning by virtue of the relationship that you have with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So in a sense, after the initial pullback comes the midrash or manos in love. It's a yira, which leads to greater closeness. That's what Yom Kippur is really about. And Yom Kippur's role in Kedushas Hazman as the linchpin, as the, you know, if you can accomplish Yom Kippur properly, then all of the rest of it falls into place and becomes an enhancement and an expression of greater devotion and a more ambitious program of Avodas Hashem. So in a sense, that's really what parallel, that's the parallel to Yiras Elokim. Right? Yiras Elokim is the Yom Kippur Midah of a person's life. Precisely with that dialectical movement of the initial recoil and then the Nivracha Manos. And precisely because if you really have it, and you can exercise it, and you do exercise it when you're supposed to, Atziyadati Kivei Elokim Atam, like Avraham Avinu, so then it allows for this wider agenda, just as Yom Kippur allows for the other Moedim. No one should be conceding the title, you know, modern usage, and notwithstanding, of being a Chared L'Dvar Hashem. That's the use of the usage of the Navi, Yeshaya, right? That cover that we read on Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, Yeshaya Samadvav. The idea of being a Chared L'Dvar Hashem is not just, again, Yiras Onesh. It's not just being Machmir. It's about, it's also sometimes about being Machmir, but sometimes about being Mekel. It's about this overall integrated perspective, this regulating principle of Yiras Elokim. One should never cede that term to a particular group, but every group should try to infuse their religious life with the kind of ambition, I think with the broader halakhic agenda, with the proper balance, ultimately is a more of a Chared L'Dvar Hashem. Chared L'Dvar Hashem is the opposite of and the antidote to the principle of Havel Havalid in a very real sense. And for this reason, it's not surprising also, I think, and this I'll conclude, that Yiras Elokim, or Yira, plays a particularly central role, not only in Kedushas Hazman, Yom Kippur, the linchpin, and not only in Kedushas HaMakom, but as the concept of Yiras HaNikdash, right, but also in mitzvot themselves. Yiras Elokim plays an inordinate role, I would say, in the context of Talmud Torah. Right, Amal Keri is also in Divrei Torah based on his inability to meet the standards of Yira. Because we have some sense that the Yerhurim that brought him to the state of Keri would reflect some sort of some sense of holemus or at very least some sense of neglect on his part of allowing emotions to get out of control. And the Gemara in Brachos describes very, very powerfully that the model of Maimon Har Sinai is a model that applies to Talmud Torah, and therefore it has to be the Yira and the Seis and Zia. Very strong formulations. That's why Bal Keri, again, they lifted the Takana because it was one that Inat Sibri called it Lamobo, perhaps, so that's a different point. But at least ideally, this idea that Talmud Torah has to be undertaken in the spirit of Yira, I think is very, very sensible. Rejects Kalas Rosh and Zilzil and imposes a certain sense of reverence. Again, there is room in Talmud Torah for the Chidude Milsa, and opening up on a light note, but you have to be very careful, I think, how that's done, and that it shouldn't be viewed as a kalas rosh and zilzal. There's room for mochanta shel Torah, the Gemara we learned last year in the third paragraph of Sanhedrin, right, where the Gemara describes the different perspectives of the Bablian and the Yerushalmian, right, or the Eretz Yisrael Amoraim. The Bablian were contentious. Their Talmud Torah was through combat, essentially real Milchamta Shel Torah. Their analysis was through initial antagonism. Whereas the Yerushalmiim were more collaborative, but, I guess it was a more gentlemanly style. Right. The remains to be determined which of these is more effective, or maybe different policies for different people. But the point is that there is a concept of this Mechan Tashal Torah, Vahes, the Sufa, Mori Kedushin, about Abu Bno and Rab and Talmido, Nasim, Oivin Zezeh, but also Einan Zazmi Shamach Nasim, Oivin Zezeh. And Mechan Tashal Torah does not mean that it's done in the spirit of Kalas Rosh. It just means that, it's a lively struggle. Again, look at the Rishonim here and there, use very sharp language. The Ra and the Rajba, and the Raivan and the Rambam, and Achronim too. Sometimes sarcastic language, sometimes very sharp language, but that's still not Kalus Rosh, and it's not a lack of reverence. It's just a certain sharpness in discussion. I like to say, in general, there's a difference between sarcasm and cynicism. There is. The connotation is different. It's sometimes determining the line between them is difficult. But there is a difference between them. There's room for sarcasm, not all the time. Probably if you're always sarcastic, it probably reveals that you really are cynical. But there's certainly room for sarcasm now and then. Cynicism is not an acceptable trait ever. And irreverence is not an acceptable trait either, even in the context of Mechan Tashal Torah. That doesn't mean when you see a svara and you don't understand it, you can't express your astonishment. And you can't even, in the context of theoretical Talmud Torah, for sure. And if you're qualified, even the Arab Psak Halacha, there's room sometimes to disagree. But, reverence means, yiras shamayim in the context of Talmud Torah, means to try to understand the position and to have enough humility to say that, I don't understand it. You could say it strongly, I don't understand it at all. You might say it makes no sense to me. If the people listening to you understand what that means. But if you say it makes no sense, or, it's ridiculous, there's a fine line between saying one and the other, but, one is acceptable, the other is a violation of that Mamad Har Sinai model of Yiras Elokim. Again, Yiras Elokim in Talmud Torah, of course, because Talmud Torah is the source for values. In a sense, without Ein Bur Yirei Elokim, Ein Am Haaretz Chassid, without Talmud Torah, the Yiras Elokim doesn't work. Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem, the relationship between Talmud Torah and Yiras Elokim, is necessarily, again, a dual. Without the values and content of what we extract from Torah, there wouldn't be, aside from the nebulous, amorphous feeling of Yiras Elokim, you wouldn't be able to put it into practice at all. If Yiras Elokim really is this sense of purpose and destiny, and it's about making difficult, challenging, complex decisions and a wider agenda and so on, of course it has to be knowledge-driven. Without the Chachma, without the Talmud Torah, you just can't be a Yirei Elokim. But of course, without the Yiras Elokim, all the study, is an intellectual exercise alone. It needs to be an intellectual exercise, but one which is primarily an existential exercise of self-definition and self-purpose. And that can only be if there is a sense of Yiras Elokim. And that's why I think there's this additional component of Yiras Elokim that applies particularly in the Arif Talmud Torah, reflected in the issue of Keri, but of course going significantly beyond that as well. So that, when we do learn, our greater sense of humility and reverence ends up, ironically, not ironically, really, ends up expanding our intellectual appreciation of and understanding of Talmud Torah, so that the entire package ends up being the experiential and existential experience that we want it to be, informed by the Yiras Elokim, and then furthering, intensifying, broadening the Yiras Elokim as well. So there's just some thoughts on Parshas Vayera. We're no longer on Parshas Vayera, right? But okay, to complete that topic, and of course there's much more to say about the relationship between Ahavat Yira and Simcha, and Avoda Me'ava and Avoda Me'Simcha, the psukim in Tanakh, and their interpretation. There's much more to be said, but these are at least some preliminary issues and comments. Okay, let's move on to...